earlier we were blueprinting where we want to go to explore Medinas Israel based on Makoros and Chazal, and to explore Yom HaTzvot based on Makoros and Chazal. And specifically in terms of Medinas Israel, we laid out four questions, one of which we already addressed at some length, and now we'll move forward. Before we address the question of isn't this not at all what Gula is supposed to look like? And we saw extensively what Chazal, a little bit, what Chazal say about Gula, and the Gemara in the bottom of Sanhedrin, Sarichel, Saban Alf, but the two different flavors of how Gula might unfold immediately and miraculously versus at the end time and with a gradual natural process leading to ultimately Melech HaMashiach. And what we're seeing is likely the unfolding of that process, especially since Baruch Hashem we've been zochet to already see the materializing of so many, or at least the beginning of the materializing of so many positive nevuos. You mentioned just a few before, and particularly we highlighted the nevuah of Zechariah Od Yeshva, which Rabbi Akiva speaks about as a waiting to see it in Makkos, where he speaks about the significance of seeing the nevuahs materializing, and the nevuah of Yechezkel about the regreening of Eretz Yisrael. So a kibbutz galios, a kimitzian teitzei Torah. There were three more questions. That was question number one. How are you talking? This isn't what Gula is supposed to look like. This isn't Mashiach. Well, actually. We had mentioned three other questions as well. Question number two was, how are you talking Yeshua? How are you talking that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would send Yeshua in the hands of anti-religious people? And what do you do with the Gemara and Ksubas? The Shalosh Shavuos? And Bechlal, isn't nationalism such a secular, non-Jewish concept? So in terms of the question of could it be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would send Yeshua at the hands of non-religious or anti-religious people, so Rav Kasher suggests that we open up a state from Melachim to the end of Melachim Beis Perek Yud Dalet. The psukim and most of Sefer Melachim keeps switching back and forth between Malchi Yehuda and Malchi Yisrael, because there were two simultaneous governments going on in the north and the south. So here at the end of Perek Yud Dalet, Melachim Beis Perek Yud Dalet, the psukim begin to speak about the next Melech Yisrael was Yeravam ben Yoash. This is the second Yeravam, not Yeravam ben Nevat, not the first Melech Yisrael. It was a big Rasha. There's another one who was a big Rasha. It tells you he was a king in Shomron for 41 years. Pasuk Chavdalad, Beis Yudal Chavdal, Vayasara ben Hashem. He was a big Avarian. Lo Sar Mikol Chatzos Yeravam ben Nevat, Shehefkis Yisrael. He kept the same hideous Masorah, the same horrific minhagim of the founder of Malchus Yisrael, Yeravam ben Nevat, Yeravam the First, who had proactively pushed Avodah Zarah as a means for attaining political control. That's what Yeravam did. Yeravam the First and Yeravam ben Nevat, Yeravam ben Yoash, Yeravam the Second, we're looking at now, like the rest of the Malchus Yisrael, continued that horrific. And the psukim stress, Hechdi Yisrael, not only was he personally over to Avodah Zarah, but he actively encouraged Kalal Yisrael to be over to Avodah Zarah. Certainly anti-religious, certainly anti the Jewish religion, in a big way. And the psukim have very little to tell us about this king. The one thing we hear about, other than the fact that he was a chote or machti, The one story that the psukim stress, at the end it says, oh, there are other things that happened also in his lifetime. We're not going to talk about it. You'll find them in the history books. The one story that the Torah, that the psukim want to tell us, that's Nevuah Shel Tzrichel Doros, is take a look in Pasuk Chafei. Hu Heshivas Gevul Yisrael Milavo Chamos Ad Yom Ha'arava, Kedvar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. He returned much of Eretz Yisrael that had been conquered by non-Jewish nations, returned it back to Jewish sovereignty. He reconquered large chunks of Eretz Yisrael. Kedvar Hashem Elokei Yisrael Asher Diber B'Yad Avdo Yodav Amita Enavi Asher Migasa Chaver, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu had sent Nevuah. The discussion in the Mefarshim read that quotes exactly where does this Nevuah appear, was it explicit or implicit, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Yeravam be the king to reconquer much of Israel. Ki ra'a, two more psukim. Chavav Chavzayin. Ra'a Hashem as Ani Yisrael, Morim Od, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Klai Yisrael, we're in a terrible situation. Ephes Azur, Ephes Azuv. We were back up against the wall. We were in a very tough situation. Ein ozer Yisrael. It was a terrible situation for Klal Yisrael, and that's why HaKadosh Baruch didn't want Klal Yisrael to be destroyed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Moshia Klal Yisrael through the hands of Yeravam ben Yoash. So number one, the psukim were out of their way to say explicitly that this was a Yeshua that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did through the Rasha, the Chote Umachti, Yeravam ben Yoash. So to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu never sends Yeshua through a Chote Umachti, Beferish Pasuk against it. And not only that, but you take a look at the way the Rishonim deal with Pasuk Chaf Vav. The Radak and the Mitzvah David both say that we didn't do tshuva. We didn't deserve it. Lo b'shvil tshuva sha'asur. Shereichem aleim ki ra'ayim. We didn't. We were terrible Rishonim at the time. Yeravam was encouraging Avodah Zarah, and the Jews were of Avodah Zarah. They were living horribly. They were mole the gadash with Averis. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Rachmanis, not because we deserved it, but because he saw what terrible straits we're in. And the Rabbag even says that the word morem od is not a description of how bad our situation was, but it means it's a description of how bad our moral situation was. Alpha Pishaya morem od is Pishem. But Mashazu is Briso. We were terribly in violation of Pishem. The Jews at the time were terribly in rebellion against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rampant Avodah Zarah, rampant Averis of all sorts, and yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us. Why? Because he had Rachmanis, because Klal Yisrael were withering away. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Rachmanis. And sent Yeshua in the hands of a terrible Rasha Amrusha, a terrible Chote Machti, Yeravam ben Yoash. So, clear that obviously, it's more ideal. Maybe if he would have been Zoche, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have sent the Yeshua at the time in the hands of a tzaddik instead. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of Klal Yisrael even when we don't deserve it, even when we're Mali Averis, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will sometimes choose to send Yeshua in the hands of a Choter Machtiz Rabbim. We don't have access to all the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbonos to know how he chooses what when, unless the Navi tells us. But it's clear that the fact that Yeshua came through a chote or machti, that is a possibility. That has happened in the past. And again, the psukim stress that it was Yeshua. Kadosh Baruch Hu sent Yeshua through the chote or machti. So that's mesalek to that kasha. Now, kasha number three is a question of the Gemara and Ksubas. What do you do with the Gemara and Ksubas? They have a Gemara and Ksubas. The Gemara says, based on the psukim in Shir Shirim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu imposed the Shavuos on the Jewish people and on the Nachrim at the time of sounds like at the time of the Galus. Shlo, you hear in the beginning of the wide lines. Gimel Shavuos halalu lama shal yal Yisrael b'choma. We shouldn't go up as a wall. Says Rashi, Yachad biyad chazaka. We're not allowed to go up as a powerful group back to Eretz Yisrael until Yemos HaMashiach, and against the wishes of the Umas Olam. Shlo yimrdu b'Umas Olam, we can't rebel against Umas Olam. And the third Shavua was that the Umas Olam should not be mishtabed b'Yisrael yosmidai. They shouldn't overly, excessively be mishtabed b'Yisrael. So this is what, as I mentioned before, the Satan Rebbe said, it's Beferish Gemara, that you can't, Shalyal B'choyma, the Gimel Shavuos, we're not allowed to go back in force, against the wishes of the Umas Olam. So number one, many say, that this Agarata is not quoted in any of the Sifri Halacha, it's not quoted in the Rambam, it's not quoted in the Torah, not quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, so sometimes Agaritas are literal, and sometimes Agaritas is a metaphorical. This one is not called the halacha in any Sefer halacha, other than one that knows Sekel in the bottom of the Sefer Mitzvahs, not exactly a Sefer of Psak. So for starters, Mehecha Teisi, this is a binding din. Then there were those who said, maybe it's the Shvuah Sahaba HaTalia. The Umas Olam also had a Shvuah. Before we even get to that, in other words, it's not God said, we're not exactly sure what this means. Like, at what point in history was this Shvuah imposed? It sounds like it's hard to know if this meant literally or is this a mashal for an idea. And it's not quoted, you might say it's a mashal for an idea, but it's an idea that's binding. It's not quoted in the Sefer HaLacha. Moreover, number two, some say, well, maybe at the time of the Holocaust, the Umos HaOlam violated their Shvuah, Shlo Yishtab Zubi Yisrael Yosem Yidai. So maybe it's a contract, and maybe once they breach on their side, we're not bound to our side. But leaving all that aside, two of the Gedolei Yisrael of Eastern Europe in the 1920s, whose names should be very familiar to you from their Svarim, the Meshach Chachma, the Arsa Meach, Rei Simcha Dvinsk, one of the great Misnagdusha Gedolim of the time, and the Shem Yishmuel, the second Sechashav Rebbe, and the great Chesisha Gedolim of the time, both made an almost identical comment, which is that after World War One, so there was a conference in around, I think, 1920 at San Remo. The San Remo Convention is when the League of Nations essentially accepted, the League of Nations is empowered and accepts the British Balfour Declaration that Britain wants to establish a Jewish homeland. Britain had said they want to establish a Jewish homeland in Eretz Israel, where the Jews will have political sovereignty over their chelik of Eretz Israel, and the League of Nations accepted it. And the Arsa Meach and Shem Yishmuel both said that changed everything. The Nusach of the Arsa Meach was after San Remo, Sar Pachad HaShvuas. The fear of the Shvuas is no longer here because now it's not Pachoma. Now the Umos HaOlam have spoken. The Umos HaOlam said that they give us permission. They give us permission to do it. And Hagabi Atzmechem the following. The League of Nations, you can read up on the history of the League of Nations. I told you before, Woodrow Wilson had this dream, a very nice dream, that you put together a League of Nations and that would be the that would bring world peace. World War would never recur. And as we know, tragically, in less than two decades, there was an even greater world war than World War One, which was World War Two. The League of Nations, you read up on the history of the League of Nations, they accomplished kim'at nothing. I don't mean that sarcastically. Take a look. They tried to get involved in different situations. They accomplished kim'at nothing. Historians debate whether the League of Nations hastened the process towards World War II or not. Miman of Shach, the one thing they accomplished, the one and only thing they accomplished, is that for centuries and centuries, Jews will learn the sugya and try to figure out what does it mean that we're going to go back to Eretz Yisrael not against the wishes. Well, what would that look like? That we're going back to Eretz Yisrael not in contravention of the wishes of Umos HaOlam. Should even do Ba Umos. What does it even mean, the Umos HaOlam? So for centuries, there was no way Jews could even have imagined. What does it mean that the Umos HaOlam as a whole would say what they feel? What they even look like? And the Kadosh Baruch Hu saw to it that there would be an institution created that whose apparently sole function was to provide a vehicle for the Umos HaOlam, the nations of the world, as a collective, to express permission, license to Klal Yisrael to return to Eretz Yisrael en masse. That was the, looks like, sole purpose. Like, that was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's purpose in bringing the League of Nations into existence. And that's what these Gedolim said, the Meshach Chacham and the Shem Yishmuel, that even if you were worried about the Shal Shavuos beforehand, that's why it made the Nusach of Pachad HaShavuos. It's not clear whether he thinks it's Taka Bain, at least being, if you were scared of the Shavuos, well, after San Remo, Sar Pachad HaShavuos. And finally, for now, one last Nekuda. We spoke about, we began to scratch the surface of what Chazal tell us about the different ways that Geula may play out, and begin to scratch the surface of looking around Tanakh and seeing so many of us materialized, and imagining how Kiva would be dancing. Number two, we looked in Malachim Beis Yedaled to see that Yeshua does, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does sometimes choose to bring Yeshua through a Chote Machti. We're not excited about it. Obviously, we'd be much more excited if HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends Yeshua through Tzadikim, but it does happen. It's not impossible that it would have happened again. We scratched the surface of some of the conversation about the Gimel Shavuos, and specifically the approach of the Meshach Chacham and the Shem Yishmuel. And finally, the notion that nationalism and national pride feels like such a goyish idea. It is, a matter of fact, it's something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Gemara tells in Chagiga, we'll close with this, Gemara tells in Chagiga that Jewish national pride is something that is, metaphorically speaking, very close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's heart. The Gemara here, in the middle of Chagiga Daf Hei Amid Aleph, the last page in the packet that you have, around 10 lines into the wide line, Hei Amid Beis, excuse me, Chagiga Hei Amid Beis, the Gemara references a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. B'mistarim tivka nafshi mipnei geva. Navi describes that Kadosh Baruch Hu saying, so to speak, kveyachal, that I'm crying in private. B'mistarim tivka nafshi. I'm crying in the private places. Why mipnei geva? So in other words, we don't always see. The Gemara says sometimes it may be in public. You can't tell that Kadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, is sad. Everything looks wonderful. The world looks wonderful. But Kadosh Baruch Hu is privately, without showing it, he's crying deeply. Why? Mipnei geva. What does mipnei geva mean? My mipnei geva. It has two opinions. Amar b'Shmuel bar Yitzchak. Mipnei ka'avasan shal Yisrael shnitl mehem v'nitl ovde kochavim. Because at the time of the Churban, the gaiva, the pride of Kal Yisrael, was taken away from them and given to the non-Jews. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been crying all these centuries. You're sure, but that's the first approach. So what does that mean? So you would say, that means the pride of Torah, the pride of Yadus. But there's a second shita. Reb Shul Ben Achmeini, a different Amora, says, "Mipnei gavasa shel malchus shamayim," because of the pride of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's malchus, because of the pride of the Jewish religion. The Rav explained a very famous Kol Dodi Dofik, the drasha he gave in the 50s. He was trying to wake up Klal Yisrael to notice HaKadosh Baruch Hu, based on the pasuk Shishim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was knocking at the door. The opportunity knocks, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was coming and reaching out. We should not ignore the knocks. He spoke then about six knocks, six different things. If you open your eyes, you see the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu is extending himself to us. And he said, these are two of those six knocks. Gavasa Shal Malchus Shamayim, the pride of the Jewish religion, the Rav understood that meant that at the time of that the Christians for centuries pointed to Churban Bayis Sheni as a proof that we're no longer the Am HaNivcher. The Christian doctrine classically was that we lost our status as Am HaNivcher because we didn't accept Yashka, and that's why we lost the Beis HaMikdash, and that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not interested in us anymore. And you see, we're not in Eretz Yisrael because we're no longer the Am HaNivcher. So that was a loss in the pride of the Jewish religion. That's why after 48, Catholic doctrine shifted to, well, but we're in the new parts, we're in the modern parts of Israel, but we're not in ancient biblical Israel. We're not in Beit Lechem, we're not in Hebron, we're not in the old city of Yerushalayim.
What about 67?
Oh, so in 1967, the Vatican almost immediately began pushing for the internationalization of Jerusalem. Why? Because the results of the Six-Day War were a direct yufta against this classical Christian doctrine. That is what the Gemara says. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been crying for centuries over the loss of the pride of the Jewish religion as a result of the Churban. So then what's the first pshat? The first pshat, Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak says, no, it's not Gavas Shalmah, it's not part of the Jewish religion. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is crying to the pride of the Jewish people. The Jewish people are downtrodden people. Jewish pride is not a secular concept. If it's something that matters to HaKadosh Baruch Hu so profoundly, we know exactly what this metaphor means, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is privately crying throughout the centuries of Churban because of the loss of Jewish pride. This is a profoundly sacred concept, both the pride of the Jewish religion and the pride of the Jewish people. Jewish pride is a authentic Torah concept. And this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been crying and crying metaphorically for centuries. And now, Baruch Hashem, those have begun to come back. The reestablishment of the State of Israel was, as I just mentioned, a reestablishment of the Gavasa Shal Malchus Shamayim in 48, even more in 67. And there was such a restoration of Jewish pride at the time of Hakamas HaMedina. such a restoration, in addition to everything else he mentioned, in addition to the restoration of Torah learning, the Kimitzin Teitei Torah, and all the Nevuas that we've seen over the course of this process increasingly materialize. In addition to the Kimitzin Teitei Torah, in the sense of the resurgence of Shmiras HaMitzvahs, and pride in Jews keeping Torah Mitzvahs, particularly at 48, and even more so after 67, that is, I believe, when the Baal Tshuva movement really took off, was after the Six-Day War. That was a resurgence of it was a Kimitzin Teitei Torah across the world, and that was one particular expression of the restoration of Jewish pride. And there were Jews who were Shomeristas beforehand, but were never comfortable wearing a yarmulke in the street until afterwards. These are profoundly sacred, holy concepts that Kadosh Baruch Hu has, so to speak, been missing for centuries. And we have to imagine that Kadosh Baruch Hu is, by the same metaphor, profoundly happy that those elements have begun to come back. So this is the beginning of how one looks at the Hakamas HaMedina through the lens of the Torah, through the lens of Chazal, through the lens of the Psukim. Obviously, there's much more to say, but I think this begins to build a framework. And none of this says that the way that the Mem Shalah is ideal. None of this says that every single law is something that we're excited about. None of this says that we approve of every single thing that every person associated with the Israeli government does. But that doesn't therefore mean that Hakamas HaMedina is not an incredibly positive thing. I think that Rav said more than once publicly that his definition of religious Zionism is a recognition that the establishment of the State of Israel was a matana tova from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Beyond that, a subset of that is to see it as we have begun to develop, not only as a great gift, positive gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as a Yeshua, like the Psukim Melachim, but also to see that it seems indicated by many sources in Chazal that this is likely, it's likely that this is the process of Geula unfolding. We're not there at the end. Mashiach has not yet come. But Geula is likely comes as a process, and we're watching so much of the unfolding of that process. That is something that should fill us with incredible joy to think of how Rabbi Akiva would dance in the streets if he was alive today. So, Mitzvah, tomorrow morning, I have a chance to move to the second half of this conversation, which is, so what does this mean in terms, from the Makoros, in terms of Yom HaTzmut? Say Hallel, not say Hallel. Say Tachan, not say Tachan. Say Slichas, to fast, to blow shofar, to say Haftarah, to take a haircut, to dance and sing, music. All of those issues we'll, Mir Tashem, address tomorrow morning from the Makaros.